そうです。
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. We all have made it through the Memorial Day weekend. We all are back in the office.
Yeah.
The base crew back. Keith, Kyle, Tyler, Lisa.
All here.
In the hosting seat today again. So be nice to me, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, the other reason I just said you have to be nice to you is our executive producer, Lisa, is going to be, you know, self-proclaimed executive producer is going to be gone for a couple of weeks. So
yeah, I go on an Aperol Spritz research trip.
Oh, good for you. Two
Let's
weeks back
way.
To the
yeah.
to the homeland, huh?
Yes.
Good for you.
So I thought we start again because I think that format worked really well the last couple of episodes. Two truths and a lie. Tell you two truth and you tell me what the lie is. I hope nobody cheated.
I didn't.
Okay, that's good. So first one is 57, because it's episode 57 today. Can you believe? Oh. 57 is the international country code, phone code for Argentina. The S&P 500 contained only 90 stocks before 1957. And C, 57 is the number of laps of the Bahrain Grand Prix. Kyle and Tyler need to know that one.
Yeah, they're the F1.
If that's a lie or truth.
I'm going to let one of these two guys go first before me, at least. So.
I think we should go last.
Okay, I'll go. Yeah, good point. Well, I have no clue on any of these, to tell you the truth. These are very
tricky.
Then
I did a good job.
You did. So I'll start with B, S&P 500 contains 90 stocks before 1957. That sounds legit. I'm going, that's true. 57 is the number of laps in the Grand Prix. I have no idea. That's such a odd number, but such an odd sport. I'm gonna say that's true. And then international country code for Argentina, 57. I'm gonna say that's false, just by my reason of deduction. Keeping it simple.
Mm-hmm. Tyler,
I know the S&P was different before the 60s, which is why whenever we do data back, we stop at like the 60s pretty much. And I know it's also you stop before pre post war as well, but. So I think that one's fine. 57. So they do 57 laps or whatever it is, just based on the distance and time to keep all the Grand Prix a similar time format, right? So every race is a different number of laps because it's going to take you longer in the Monaco, or it's going to be faster in Monaco Grand Prix because there was, 78 laps?
Mm-hmm. Is that the one last weekend or coming up?
Yep.
Last weekend.
Spain is this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, guys.
So for
get with.
I mean, I don't know if it's 57 exactly because Bahrain is usually the first race of the year. Well, it wasn't this year, but past years it has been. So it's done and gone. But I would say that's probably true, I would guess.
Oh, boy.
So I'm going with A.
All right.
Kyle?
Yeah. Bahrain was number five this year, was 57 laps.
Who knows that?
Well, we know who the super F1 fan is versus the fake
mediocre.
Oh, there is a new bully relationship coming up.
Let's see here. I don't know about, B seems, I think Tyler's right on the money on that one. 60s are where the data kind of stops. In terms of where you kind of normalize stuff, I'm going to go with A as well.
So three A's.
Mm-hmm.
Are we all wrong?
I'm busted, unfortunately.
Wow.
57 is the county phone code for Colombia, not Argentina. Mm. But everything else is correct.
What is Argentina's?
I don't know.
Oh,
not 57. Obviously.
I just took another Latin American country that I have run one line there.
Good for you. That was a great one.
Yeah. So let's ease into our topic today. And for the wait, what topic? I thought we talk a little bit about the changing change in the U.S. the penny is gone or will be gone and phased out in 2026. And then there will be no more 1 cent denomination coins anymore. Mm. How are we feeling about that? I mean,
There'll still be a 1 cent coin. It's just they're not minting anymore, right?
So right.
The ones that are existing, they're not going to come to your house and rob your piggy banks right. and give you $14.
But it's like at some point it gets less and less. Mm. And I just remember, I'm that old now, yes. I was still a kid when Austria adopted the euro from the shilling. And that's a whole currency. That's a different animal than just one single coin. But still, I realized how emotionally attached people were to their currency. It was like, it was really daunting for the people who was like, oh my God, we have a new currency and that strips us of our identity because now, you know, a whole European Union has the same and our shilling is gone, our beloved currency and all of that. So there was a lot of emotions attached to that, which is interesting. Do you feel the same with the penny?
Before I jump in there, so what happened to the shilling? So if you had, say, 500 shillings at home, did you literally go to the bank and turn it in?
You went to the bank and turned it in, and then you got euros for it.
So if you didn't do that, are you sitting on a worthless piece of paper?
So you could go to the bank for years after that, and then the bank stopped accepting it, and then just the national bank. Like the ECB, kind of basically where the Austrian national banks in the different countries were taking it back, which is a little bit more complicated to get there and all of that. And I think you can still change it if you find some.
Okay.
But it gets
less curiosity before we get into the penny thing.
And now it's like when somebody finds a shilling, and some people actually kept some as a keepsake. And kind of framed them and all of that. So yeah, it's a pretty emotional stuff that was going on. So I want to ask you if you also keep a keepsake or how are you thinking about the penny?
My mind goes to just like fiat cash currency anyway. Like everything, that question's interesting because 20 years ago, you might say, oh yeah, this is like a big thing. Mm-hmm. But now everybody pays digitally. Mm-hmm. Like you go to Target or Walmart or wherever and you take your phone and you or you take your card and Keith. You tap it, or unless you're Keith.
I do.
You know,
I like cash.
right. But you know, it says something more about the culture because, you know, like Germans are very like cash, like cash is king. Right. So it's a dip, you know, versus in the US, you go to some places for coffee and they don't even take cash.
They don't even take cash.
Like, you know, it's unusual. So I don't know if there'll be a big impact or not, especially it'd be interesting to look at it by demographic, by age kind of cohort, because I would imagine young people
don't care that much.
Yeah, like they don't, probably will have no impact whatsoever. But interesting to think about.
Mm-hmm. It's funny you bring that up, because growing up, it was always you go to a sporting event or a park or whatever, and you always worry about, do they actually take credit cards? Mm-hmm. Because you need to make sure you have cash. And now it's flipped.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I know they'll take a card, but I don't.
A lot of stadiums don't take cash.
Right. So we went to the zoo last weekend, and I naturally had to get some of the Dippin' Dots.
Health nut over there.
But they only took card, right? Like they didn't accept cash at the Dippin' Dots stand. Which I thought was odd.
Strange.
But
Keith, it is.
Do you keep a keepsake?
Probably not. I mean, what I found more interesting is that it costs, 4 cents to make a penny? Yeah. Which
that's one of the reasons to kind of...
So I guess economically that makes a lot of sense to... If you're paying 4 cents to make something, it's like, how about we stop doing it? Especially on the lowest denomination. Now, it'll be interesting if that works its way up to the nickel, the dime, the quarter. Because I think there's different metrics that you probably... talk about as well that I don't know. I mean, as much as I like cash, usually the coins are kind of smaller side of things, you know.
Well, when did we start minting the penny? Because like the reason I'm asking that is 1 cent 100 years ago was worth a lot more than 1 cent is worth today
because of inflation.
Because of inflation. So I think at some point you just start getting rid of like the ones, yeah. 1 cent, five
That's
cent,
what I mean.
And like
because there's
just you can do the $9.99,
the dollars, the new penny,
like exactly, yeah,
right.
That's the
well they must have been minting them for a long time because what they had wheat pennies,
yeah,
which wasn't that like the early 1900s.
Yeah, I wonder what that does for the coin collecting. I suppose it makes it more valuable if you have coins, especially like the wheat. I remember looking at, when I was a kid, looking at coins, whether it was the wheat penny or some other different things that you're, or years of things. So
you think the last one they're going to mint, they're going to put something on it? Something special?
Yeah,
probably.
Or like
probably,
some,
probably
like
Trump's
some
head replaced
some
whoever's
special run. Because when are they done with it? 2027?
2026, I think. I think they have like the... you know, the forms they're using, and when they're running out of those, then it's over. So it's sad that it's 2026.
Who's on the penny? Anybody know?
Lincoln.
That's what this is my guess too, but I'm not 100% sure on that.
Pretty positive.
All right. Guess it's an episode for next time.
I mean, it's interesting because as you said, like with the cash, that it's probably for most of the people, or especially younger people, doesn't matter all that much. I mean, since I live in the U.S., I never, I think, saw one single penny. I don't actually know how it looks, to be honest, because I never pay cash, basically. Mm. And when I'm with the dollars, and then you get some quarters back or whatever, but I actually never used it.
It's certainly changed even the last, I'd say, 5 years, because I have, you know, girls are in college, sons in high school at the end. It's when they're in high school, they, you know, I'd always give them cash money whenever they're doing stuff. And he's never asked for money. It's just he charges whatever. And I'm sure I pay for it at the other end of things. So, but it's never cash.
Yeah. Venmo or.
Yeah, exactly.
Cash app.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I think, Kyle, you brought it up that it, or Keith, you brought it up that it costs 4 cents to produce one penny. And last year in 2024, there were 3 billion pennies produced. And it cost $85 million.
Wow.
That is like insane. And now, when we go to the next smallest one, which will be the nickel costs 13.78.
So we should get rid of that one first.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so my question is, when we get rid of the penny and then all the price tactics like $9.99, all of that has to go, basically. If you accept cash, if you accept card, doesn't matter because I heard they're
still... Well, pennies are still in circulation. It's just not minting them. So
right, but would maybe be the demand for nickels then increased, which is also very much more expensive than what it is worth or what the worth if
we
give it.
I don't think so.
I mean, it's going to take a while. Like, to Tyler's point that everybody's not going to just throw out their pennies in a couple of years either.
Everything's digital.
Right.
So it's like you can still do the $9.99 just because...
I would imagine
you don't need to worry about having that. Physical
anybody have the stats on what how much cash versus like credit card for like just any like
I've GPV, seen a chart like on that before.
You know, total payments.
I'll
assume it's a small number. It used to be obviously 100%. Now we think sub 50%.
I bet it's 40%.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's somewhere around there. But there is a chart out there with it.
But I heard
stay tuned for next week's episode when we all these hot
deep cuts.
Yeah, deep cuts.
But I heard with the credit card they still charge 2 cents. So it would be just a change for cash payments.
Mm-hmm. Right. You'd think that they would go down. I mean, just the whole not accepting cash is kind of unusual in general. Because you think about like the carriers like Visa, MasterCard, all that backbone and you know, just accepting digital currency, Stripe payments, it's, you know, 2-3% of the cost to actually transact that way. So you'd think that there would be like a deep rooted preference to accept cash.
Mm-hmm. That's why, I mean, you do. And it's hard to track as well, right?
Right.
So the government and income taxes and the
cash,
like if you pay like Tyler, maybe you could have paid someone for those steps that he couldn't build correctly, could have paid him cash, could have got done cheaper or something.
Right.
Yeah. Yep, probably.
I mean, and other countries already stopped producing it, right? Canada stopped in 2012. Australia, New Zealand stopped their smallest coins.
Well, what did they do with the marketing tactics then? They go $9.95.
That's interesting. I didn't go that deep into it, but I never heard anything about it. So I think the impacts are muted.
Right.
Because I never heard that before, that they stopped the penny before. So the implication.
I wonder if they still have that sign of $9.99, but then when your total bill, when you buy all your items, all of a sudden they round it up or down, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe there's some. Mm-hmm.
At the round end. It up a penny.
Yeah. Yeah, back to 10.
Anyway, so that discussion obviously needs a little bit more information in the next podcast. A little deeper dive into all the mechanics of the penny. For the hot button topic today, I thought we'd talk a little bit about if financial education is working, because I saw some interesting charts and stats on that lately, which I am really pleased of seeing, and I think it's really good news. So the thing is, the U.S. ETFs this year have collectively gained around $437 billion in new assets just this year. And that all despite the volatility and despite everything that's going on in new money. And that's not just institutional money, but a whole lot of that is from retail investors, who just, you know, kind of started investing on their own and kind of informed themselves, which I thought is very interesting, because it seems that they are getting more confident and kind of less confused, or at least scared by market volatility. What do we think of that?
Tyler, go ahead.
I mean, I think you've got enough retail investors now that are well educated to continue buying, especially when you do get these types of volatility, mm-hmm. or market declines. We always hear about buying the dip, and I think that's what you're literally seeing, because now it's so much more accessible today for retail mm-hmm. investors to actually do that and buy ETFs or stocks or whatever it is, right? There's no fees on Schwab or whatever.
Yeah, Fidelity. Brokerage fees, you know, yeah. Used to be $10, $15
exactly.
a trade.
To trade a stock now, it's free. And so you don't have to worry about, I need to buy at least 100 shares to make my $10 cost
commission yeah.
to pay mm-hmm. off, right? So mm-hmm. I just think retail investors can do it a lot easier now. And so the fact that they see a decline of 15%, mm-hmm. I think they're just buying it and mm-hmm. hoping to ride it out, which is what is great in mm-hmm. my opinion.
Yeah. I think they're just a lot more informed than they used mm-hmm. to be. The information's at their fingertips. There's, whether it's podcasts like this or just their own research, and used to be, you know, the retail investors, the uninformed investor. I think the information's out there now. They can become mm-hmm. informed, and they're actually done the right thing recently, is they bought this dip, which is, we've had a, you know, 15% sell off mm-hmm. followed by a 15% correction. Whereas most mm-hmm. institutional people are probably a little more scared off. And
but why do you think that is? Because that's a good point you brought up, because the institutional investors and sometimes the sophisticated or the smart money, and retail investors, the dumb money, which I do not like the term at all. I think it's
a common phrase
anymore,
out there. You hear, yeah.
But it's mm-hmm. common. But they're the least bullish or the most bearish in 30 years. And they kind of stepped out of the game, a lot of them, and retail investors stepped in. So who's the dumb money now, it seems?
Yeah, maybe it's the fact that institutional people have a lot more data, just, and then they maybe get themselves in the weeds too much mm-hmm. instead of just taking, you know, kind of the broad picture. They're just mm-hmm. really focused on stuff, whether it's globally or tariffs or taxes or policy, mm-hmm. where maybe the individual investors looking at their research on their individual ETF or stock, and that's what they're focused on, and they're not paying attention to all the other noise, which mm-hmm. again, right now it's worked to their advantage, but at other point in time, there's probably, yeah. you know, the institutional investors has a lot of
information
so it's, yeah. yeah, it's, now I like the fact, like you mm-hmm. said, that people are buying this and becoming more informed and mm-hmm. maybe less that's a bigger thing on the less panicking.
Yeah.
I think that was historically the case, where all of a sudden they'd see institutional investors kind of, you've seen these dips and kind of, you know, ride it out. Whereas traditionally with the individual investors, you can studies show it, they chase performance up mm-hmm. and they panic on the way down. Maybe we've seen a little bit of a mindset change. It'll be interesting if this holds, or if this yeah. is more just kind of an anomaly in this period.
And the interesting thing is also, there's a little bit of a saying is like, okay, when retail investors get in and talk about it, then it's time for you to get out. But that seems to change as well.
Kelly, any thoughts on this whole institutional versus individual?
Yeah, I think there's kind of two things mulling about in my mind. The one, as you were talking, was incentive alignment and timeframes. So, you know, historically, I think it might be a little bit more education, obviously, is helpful. And then institutional investors are, in general, targeting a one-year performance for compensation reasons, for other things. So they might target longer-term, incentives, but in general, it's that kind of short-term swing. Whereas if you're investing your own money, you might say, okay, Warren Buffett, time arbitrage, we're going to, buy low, we're going to hang on to this for 20 to 30 years, and it'll be fine. And that alignment is very, very different and provides an edge to the retail investor. And if they're actually doing that, the other thing I think is interesting about the education comment is when you think about just online, like, you go to X or Twitter or, whatever, what I
TikTok
see
TikTok even.
Yeah, right? TikTok, whatever. I do find it fascinating because there's such, there are these echo chambers where I see it go through on my stuff where you'll see like a whole flurry of dividend investing and you'll see a whole flurry of this and a whole like Bitcoin and this and this and this. And there's these very distinct non-overlapping groups where they are just talking. No, Bitcoin to the moon or GameStop.
Mine is the best.
Yeah, mine's the best, whatever. Yeah, like, we saw that with the meme stocks a couple years ago during COVID where, GameStop to the moon, right? And these very
Reddit boards.
Right. So it is interesting, the education, because it's almost like the snake eating its own tail, like this vicious cycle of you don't know what you don't know. And so I'm the jury's out on how educated the retail investor might be. Because it's like garbage in, garbage out, right? Mm-hmm. Like the quality of your research matters over the long period of time, I would say. So I don't know. Those are the things that I think about.
No, that's a very good point actually from you, because it's like there's so much more information, right, with podcasts, blogs, and everything. But there's also some black sheep out there, right, who just talk without really having a whole lot of knowledge or not the best thoughts or, and then it's like, okay, what do you believe? And it's hard to sometimes sift out the rights and the wrongs, basically. And you can get caught up or getting down the rabbit hole pretty quick when it comes to investing, and it can get pretty dangerous for your financial future if you believe all of that blindly. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, it's a lot more accessible, all the information. I mean, years back,
you just didn't have the access to
it. Like, how did you, like,
what are you trying to say about it?
Well, yeah.
No,
back in the stone tablet days or what, Lisa?
Well, he does have an abacus on his desk.
That didn't age well. No, but I was like, when you started investing or interest, you were in that space.
It was hard to get information, right?
The
internet was just barely starting, and the financial systems, there's like, Bloomberg, there was really no facts set around at the point in time for institutional investors. Even institutional investors, you weren't getting intraday quote, it was like midday and then end of the day. And accessibility is totally different. It's a game changer. Everybody's got on their phones or apps. You can pick up, look at your portfolio. You can see intraday performance. You can see good or bad. I think it's a good thing. And it's the people I come across, like back when I started, people weren't that interested. If you were interested in investments, you were, but if you weren't, you're not. And now, like, I'm meeting all kinds of people. I always ask, and they ask what I do, and I tell them, and they're like, oh, that's great. I got, kids that do that or friends, and there's a lot of questions, and they listen to. It's great for the subscribers that listen. Thank you, guys. And there's also the other day I met an older person. It was like, he was talking stocks. He didn't even know I did the business. And he's just like, well, that's interesting. And then he started asking a bunch of questions. So there's all across the board, they're getting informed, which I think is great, from the young all the way to the old. And like we always tell our advisors and our clients, more informed advisors and clients that we have, the better off I think we all are. And just less of that panic. Maybe starting to set in.
Yeah. I mean, we were looking at cabinets this weekend too, and the lady that was designing the cabinets was trying to tell me about tariffs and
yeah,
price on cabinets and Trump is extended it. And I'm just saying, I didn't say anything. Like, I know, but
yeah,
she went on this whole rant of Trump and tariffs and it's like, great.
No, it's but,
yeah.
Well, okay. Let me ask you this. Sorry. I don't want to jump in and take your spotlight.
the bullying already.
Yeah. Thank you, Keith.
But because of the accessibility, do you guys think, so we saw the V bottom for COVID. We didn't necessarily get like a full V bottom from 22, but it, I mean, it was a pretty quick snapback. And then we've got a V bottom so far for this one. Is that the reason for the V bottoms is just the accessibility? You've got more retail investors just pushing money into it to keep the stocks from going down. Is that why we're seeing these V bottoms, or is there something that's just different than 2000, the dot-com bubble, the great financial crisis? Like, is there something inherently different now than it was back then?
Yeah, I'm not sure on that even, because it's a V, but I mean, yeah, we've had a quick sell off and a rebound. Now a V bottom, am I, and we keep on going at this kind of pace. I'm not sure that's going to happen. So we'll see. I don't know why. Maybe it's part of the trading is no longer institutional trading. It's not even just groups like us putting our money to work and buying and selling this stock or ETF. It's computer trading. And I think that can, the rapidness of that and just the instantaneous information that, I mean, we're just talking about information is great, but I mean, the computer stuff is just like instantaneous. It's like they're making trades and they're, you know, shaving off pennies and nickels on the trades, which we don't do that, but that's, and I think that kind of has some impact on the overall market as well.
I think
that makes sense.
Earnings too make a big difference. I mean, if you think about like a individual stock, many times, like contrarian investing, you get this big crater in, you know, for some styles of that. And then it can bounce around at the bottom for a long time. UNH would be a great example of a chart like that now where it's fine and then it falls off the cliff and it'll probably be a little while before it recovers. But if you match hundreds of securities within that, all those non-overlapping earnings sessions, I think, provide a cleaner climb out of those kind of holes when correlations kind of break, you know.
Yeah.
So,
Lisa, any thoughts on V bottoms or not?
No, overall, to Tyler's point, I mean, I think we saw the whole retail investing really stepping up in COVID times when we saw the major sell off. And then they were really, a lot of people were investing for the first time back then. A lot of them have stayed and kind of kept on investing. Why do you think that is? Was it because people were bored?
Nothing else to do.
I think that's part of it. I mean, like, I have a nephew that is just like trades all the time. It's just like crazy that I think part of that just because of they found the freedom to do it. They could start with a small amount, like Tyler's point.
They couldn't spend their money anywhere else.
Yeah, so. Couldn't spend it and say, okay. And then all of a sudden, social media, I think, drives a lot of this, whether it's, you know, TikTok or what these other ones. All of a sudden, they get, to you said, you get into a group that loves Tesla or Bitcoin or whatever, and the kind of, oh, that's how it matches my thoughts. And that's kind of how you start investing.
I mean, COVID, like one of my best friends, he would send me pictures of CNBC because he was working from home, right? He's in Washington, D.C. He's got nothing else to do besides work. And in the background, he would have CNBC on. So then he would start asking about the stocks they're talking about. Should I buy this? Should I not? Like that. I think that's what.
Was it Cramer?
he
at least needed to stay away from the Cramer picks.
Tyler is the man behind Cramer. Is that what you're saying?
Everything he says tanks.
There is a on Twitter inverse Cramer.
Yes,
I think they stopped it right.
Is it done?
It's performed very well.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah,
but didn't they stopped it or discontinued
I don't
ETF?
Know.
I heard about something like that discontinued it.
Maybe just not.
I don't know if there's an ETF for it, but
there was an ETF.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I know people just tracked it.
Yeah.
Well, they do that with Pelosi as well.
Yeah. Yeah. What is it? Quiverquant?
Yeah.
Anywho, overall, I think a good development, I think, because we at Gradient as well, we're talking for years and years trying to educate and getting out as much information as possible, because we think just an only an educated client is one that can make good financial decisions and not just trusting us blindly. But we want our clients to make informed decisions and know about the markets and what's going on. And we again, everyone like out there, like media and all of us, say for years, like stay the course, diversify, right? Invest according to your risk profile, have a long-term perspective, and all that mantra over and over and over again. We see actually it bears fruit now, because with all of the developments with retail investors and generally, and we saw it as well, like in April, like peak volatility and all of that. We did not get a whole lot of calls, which was a little bit surprising, right? We expected a little bit more calls from advisors, from clients. We expected a little bit more more nervousness, but we put out information timely, what's going on, and communicated properly, and we didn't really see a whole lot of nervousness, which is good.
Yeah.
Which is another example, I think, that this works, what we are trying to do for years, and communicating and educating and all of that.
Yeah, panicking is the worst investment. It's just terrible. It's just, you buy high, you sell low. It's just, if you can take that away from that, helps just a lot.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I just want to finish this with what we did at Gradient Investments, right? Because we're like, we have all the information necessary, sometimes a little bit too much information. So in April or whatever, did we panic? Tyler, did we panic?
No.
That's
absolutely
great.
Not.
And generally, how did we deal with the uncertainty in April? Like, what did we do? What did we not do, Keith?
Yeah, I think that's the time when you sell these kind of, or when you see these big sell-offs, you kind of gradually put money back into the, if you have money on the sidelines or kind of the more defensive position, you kind of rotate some of those into the more offensive. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what we did, you know, on different portfolios. And again, it's, you weren't panicking on the way down either. So you probably weren't selling a bunch and then rebuying it back. So you can avoid that. And it, you know, generally I think all of us believe in buying higher quality, long-term winners, more lower turnover, right? So it's like, if you have lower turnover, you stick with those names that are selling off. And then, oh, by the way, if you do have some of that extra cash on the sidelines or more defensive, those are the times you start rotating back into the market. Now, I think the market's rebounded. And I think year to date, S&P's up about 2% as of this podcast. So we're on track for that kind of normalized year. It doesn't feel like it. And now that's another whole, you know, segment at a different time. Is it certainly doesn't feel like we're up 2% with all the news flow in the market this year, does it?
So that, I think that proves that we walk our talk, I think. That we are not the institutionals who are the most bearish in years.
No.
That's great. Kyle, any finishing thoughts on that?
No, I think Keith said it well.
Awesome. So let's end it with spaghetti wall then. I brought something new today.
Mm.
I hope you like it. And I hope you didn't cheat before.
Tyler.
He's like, oh my god, I'm gone.
I didn't even realize this was down here.
Oh,
it's Lisa's pages and pages of notes. That's why.
Yeah, that's a little bit more.
No one can get through to the bottom.
So I will tell you some tickers and some companies and what they're doing, and you tell me if it's a real company or if it's a scam, basically, not existing. Okay, ready? Vogds Inc., pet tech company.
What's the ticker?
WAGC.
Wags, huh? Okay.
Wags, Vogds.
We're supposed to say that's a real company or not? Is that
on the table? You tell me it's a pet tech company, and you tell me if it's real or if I just make that up.
Pet tech. What does that even mean?
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, all the automatic like feeders and all of that.
Oh, yeah.
And,
okay.
And kind of the
all
chips.
Right.
And
I'll start. I'll say that one's real.
I'll go with real.
I'm going to say real too.
I got you with the first one.
Whoa.
It's not a real company.
Oh, really?
Yep. I made it up.
Whoa.
Nice job.
Next one, ticker Boom, DMC Global. It's an explosion welded metal company. So they weld metal with explosions.
Sounds awesome. But
I mean, the ticker is Boom.
Kyle started, he's saying fake.
You think it's fake?
I think it sounds like a great idea, but I don't think it's real.
I'm going to go with real. Might as well.
I'm saying not. No.
It's real.
Dang. Yeah.
Wow. Tyler won. Kyle Keith. Zero.
I thought I got you with that one. Then the next one is Snack, ticker SNAK, Snackable Brands Inc., which is obviously a snack company with different snacks.
Tyler, you want to
start? I'm going with fake.
That's real.
I'm going to go fake.
It's fake.
Boy, Keith over three.
The next one is Body. The ticker's Body. The name is the Beach Body Company. It's a fitness and well-being company with supplements.
I'll go first
stuff.
Again, since I'm so hot. I'm going to, this absolutely sounds ridiculous. And I'm saying it's fake, but I'm going to be wrong.
This
so
is
I'm,
inverse Keith now.
Yeah.
I'm going
real. Is this inverse Keith?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm so going you're going real. With real? Real. It's real.
Yeah. Go for four. Nice.
It didn't age well, but it's real. Yeah. And the next one is Grip. Ticker is Grip. Grip Tech Robotics. It's a warehouse automation company.
I'll let you two go first so I can get one right.
I'm going to go with real.
I'm going to go with fake.
It's real.
It's fake.
Dang it.
Oh, for five. Wow. You can't
Whoa.
Even make that up.
Inverse Keith is yeah. really going strong.
Good thing I don't invest in these kind of companies.
Yeah. So, it was just a little bit something different.
That was
but,
fun.
I got you on that one.
Embarrassing.
We will practice a little bit
Thanks,
more.
Thanks, Lisa, before you go on vacation. Perfect. Yeah.
Thank you. Well, guys, see you next week. Until then,
well, you care. Not so much.
No, I'm not so much.
Yeah,
I will watch the episode with an April spritz in my hand.
Okay. Oh, perfect. Yeah.